Blog Talk Radio. Wonderful World, and they have a schedule of its fourth annual festival at the historic, as opposed to hysteric, Flushing Meadows Corona Park, and we're going to have Jeffrey Rosenstock, the big shot who's running this thing, to talk to us about it, but before that, we have a message from one of our sponsors.
Hey, Martha, why do you smile? I was just thinking, I'm here at Ronnie Brook Farms eating delicious grass, not being injected with some synthetic hormones. I just gave birth to another cutie calf and don't even have to deal with any bull. I hear you, Mar. You know what they call cows that can't give milk? No, what, Sal? Utter failure. So, where is our big daddy Ronnie? Probably somewhere exercising, doing yogurt. At Ronnie Brook Farms, you'll find the best of dairy products. Our milks vary in butterfat from non-fat to heavy cream. Enjoy the creamy yogurts from the cup or one that you can simply drink with the best of culture without artificial thickeners or additives. We don't have sour cream. We do have creme fraiche. Butter is better when you can choose cinnamon toast to spread on bread or pancakes. And since we scream for ice cream any time of year, you'll love our 16% butterfat. Do you remember getting bottled milk delivered, opening it to find the cream on the top? That is how you'll find our sweet-tasting cream-lined milk. I'll hand it to you, Sal. Our milk may get past your eyes, but certainly not homogenized. Ronnie Brook Farms, where cows always seem to be in a good mood. Check us out at www.ronniebrook.com.
Oh, yes. Hello, hi. Jeffrey.
Hi, how are you?
Okay. Yeah, I wrote that one. Did you listen to it?
It was cute. I laughed.
I had asked them if they could submit a commercial to me. And then I said, wait, never mind. I'll write it.
You did a good job on that one. It was cute.
I was hoping they could take it and then use it, like, visually.
Nationally.
Do a commercial.
Right. Yeah, nationally. Make some money.
That's what I do. I told them it's theirs for their use. Anyway, first I want to introduce you, because I have to tell you something that was, like, a little humorous. When I got the information as to, because I said, well, who do I need to interview for this? I was asking, we have... They keep changing editors over at the Times Ledger all the time. And so, do you know who Zach is?
No.
His name is Zach? Okay. So what had happened was that, so I'm getting, saying to call, and it said Kufferberg sent, but gave me a phone number. I'm just calling. And the calling is, and I get the box office of the Queen's Theater. I'm going,
no.
I don't know why he gave me that.
Are you serious?
But I'm serious. This is what he sent me. The editor sent me this and gave me that phone number to call.
Wow.
And then I what happened is I finally got to, you know, to get to Nina and so on and so forth. But it occurred to me about being updated, that maybe he thought that you were the person to call, but didn't realize that you're no longer
there. Right.
Yeah.
Could be.
I will have to tell him.
That's
so
funny.
That's why I wanted to give a quick background on you, because we want to know, like, you know, why you're even connected with anything that has to do with music or theater at all.
Oh, at Queens College?
Well, now that you're at Queens College, I mean, but your background, I want to talk a little bit about your background of being at Queens Theater, that you were dealing with music and shows and events there first.
Sure. That was probably the job that was made for me, or I made it because I actually, the theater didn't exist. It had shut down in the 70s. And the city, the Department of Cultural Affairs, and the borough president, Claire Shulman, put out an RFP to see who wanted to take over an abandoned building in Flushing Meadows Corona Park in 1989. And because I was 35 and eager to do crazy stuff, I wrote the application and I married the Queens Council on the Arts so people would know there would be an institution behind it. And they gave us this abandoned building with a homeless population in it with the doors cracked open, and we decided to make a theater out of it and bring it back to life. And I had a beautiful 22 years working at that theater.
So in other words, but we also know, well, I know, I don't know if everybody else knows, that the theater was formerly, I mean, the building was still there, right?
The building
was there from
the 1960, right, from the 1964 World's Fair. It was a Philip Johnson. It was part of the New York State Pavilion, and it was called the Theaterama, and it had some Andy Warhol art on the outside, and on the inside was a 360-degree movie theater. There were no seats or risers. You just stood in the middle of a floor, and the entire round building was a movie screen, and it was a movie about New York State. And then in the early 70s, a group came in and put some seats in there and a riser and built the stage. And then it ran for a while, and then it shut down around the mid-80s. And it just sat dormant, and Claire Shulman didn't like to have a dormant, empty theater in her borough and knew that there was funding for it, and she's the one that said, let's get this theater up and running.
By the way, I'm glad you answered the question of what was there. I always wondered. I kept thinking, was that where they showed the Abraham Lincoln thing? Was that where I couldn't figure out what they were showing there. But once you said that, now I kind of remember a bit that, yes, mm-hmm. It was one of those type of places. Just stood there in the middle and
that's
the movie
right.
was all around you.
Yeah. And it's still a magical place, a magical building, and a magical location, you know, which it's fun. That's why I'm happy to be back there with the Armstrong Festival in that park, because it's a World's Fair grounds. You know, it's a very special place.
So then what happened is you left the theater, and now you're over at Queens College. What's your position over there?
So I have multiple. My title is I'm the Assistant Vice President of Government and External Affairs, but I'm also the Executive Director of the Kupferberg Center for the Arts. So the arts is part of my portfolio. I'm also the lobbyist, you know, government affairs person for the college at large, but I oversee all of the arts organizations at the college, including the Colden Auditorium, the Godwin Turnback Museum, the Louis Armstrong Museum, and archives all report to me. And I try to help them.
And do you? Has it been successful? Have you had a lot of success with dealing with outside sources?
At the
Kupferberg Center? To get funds and things like that?
Yeah, actually, we've done quite well. There's a long-term sponsorship by New York Community Bank of our main stage performances. They signed a 10-year agreement, which really helps. And our when we started out, you know, we have 2,100 seats. That's a lot of seats to fill. And then also a 500-seat Left Rack concert hall. So I hired a curator, an artistic director, and he convinced me to start off for the first 10 years, and we're probably in year 5 right now, to do only shows that have name recognition and great, great artists. So people will come out. First, people will come because they'll recognize the artist, and then they'll come out and say, that was a great show. Well, who are they bringing here next? And some of those people have been Jerry Seinfeld, Wynton Marsalis, Johnny Mathis, Gladys Knight. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones that we've had there. Comedians like Aziz Ansari. We just had, from the Trevor Noah a couple of weeks ago. So we're really bringing in people. People go, oh, Trevor Noah, Gladys Knight, Dance Theater of Harlem, you know, Vienna Boys Choir. We know these talent, and now let's go to this venue and see what's there. And we have to be really careful that the talent delivers. So people ask that question at the end, who's coming next? And I think we've done quite well with that.
Something big is coming up. Who's coming up? Is there somebody coming up soon? Well, not soon.
There's somebody actually. It's a rental, and it's a major artist from the Philippines that's coming this Saturday, the same day as our festival. I can't remember her name off the top of my head.
No, I thought I saw something even further, like in October or something.
I'm trying to think. Who do we have in October? Well, we're hoping to have Gladys Knight in October. We're waiting to lock that in. We've got the 10 tenors in December. We've got a group from Chile called Inti Illimani coming in. We have Sweet Honey and the Rock in January. I'm trying to think what else that we have already locked in. We have the Sleeping Beauty, a Russian ballet company. Oh, and I know Peter Yarrow is coming in October. That's who you're thinking of.
That's the one.
From Peter, Paul, and Mary. Yeah.
Yes,
and
yes,
he'll be in our 500-seat concert hall. And last year we had Judy Collins there at that time, and it completely sold out. So it was, you know, it was a beautiful concert. And Left Rack Concert Hall is probably one of the nicest concert halls in the city. People rent it all the time, classical artists, Renee Fleming, in fact, to record, because the acoustics are so perfect in there.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was amazing the first time I went to something. That's the first thing I noticed is the acoustics.
They're really incredible.
But that was also something I had always noticed about the acoustics of Colden Auditorium, as compared as compared to the theater, you know, with the for students, the drama, you know, that
right.
kind of thing.
No, Colden is also, it was built not as a theater, but an auditorium to house primarily back in that day, you know, in the 60s when it was built, classical music was a very popular, well-attended, you know, discipline. And it is a beautiful concert hall. And, you know, acoustically it is as well.
Yeah, it certainly is.
And then we house groups like, you know, the Queen Symphony Orchestra comes and performs there, and we have a lot of programming during the week for the kindergarten through sixth grade. You know, I think we bring like 50,000 kids a year through the building to see shows there too. So it's a quite robust schedule that's going on there.
I'm glad to hear this. So now, how are you involved with this? Well, first tell us what this whole thing is with this Louis Armstrong.
So I think one of the greatest treasures that the college maintains for the community at large is the Louis Armstrong Museum in Corona, which was the house he and his fourth wife, Lucille, bought and lived in until both of them passed away. And we also maintain on the college campus, and that's in Corona on 107th Street, we also oversee and manage the Louis Armstrong Archives, which are housed at the Queens College Library, the largest archives of any jazz musician in the world. How that came about was when Mr. Armstrong passed and Mrs. Armstrong, they deeded their house to the city of New York. And the New York City Department of Cultural Affairs and Claire Shulman were looking around going, who's going to take care of this house and turn it into a museum? At that moment, Queens College just initiated a new jazz program under the direction of Jimmy Heath, who's now 90 years old, an amazing jazz player, and also had built this new library and had archival space. So it was given to Queens College to manage and operate. And in fact, we're breaking ground on July 17th across the street from the museum with a $20 million project to build an education and visitor center. We raised money from the city and state to do that. So basically, because we have that, and we're preserving Armstrong's legacy in terms of giving tours of the home, which is a museum and a national landmark, and the archives are used by people literally from around the world to study about Louis Armstrong. We also said, how do we maintain his legacy and keep it vibrant? Why don't we do a music festival celebrating everything that Louis stood for? And the biggest quote about Louis, that if you go to a tour on the house, is, you know, he recorded a lot of dinners he had with friends and conversations. And one of them, someone was saying to him, because he had such an amazing record collection from classical music to jazz to pop music, and he told that person, you got to listen to all kinds of music. And that's what our festival is about, all kinds of music, all kinds of people. Louis Armstrong was an ambassador for the United States, a music ambassador, and I really felt that Queens today is the ambassador of what America is going to look like with all our different cultures and ethnic populations. And, you know, so while Louis was an ambassador, let this festival in Queens be an ambassador, too, of all kinds of music, all kinds of people getting together. And what better location than Flushing Meadows, yeah, Corona Park, the site of the 64 and the 39 World's Fairs.
So that's, it's also perfect location since it's there near the Queens Theater.
Yeah, it's also near
your
the
old
theater,
home.
Near the Unisphere. It's a territory I know really, really well, and the people in the park and the park management. You know, so it was not coming into a place I didn't know and amid strangers. And we used the theater actually to host. We have a beer and wine garden in the theater. We have Ricky Riccardi from the Louis Armstrong Museum giving a talk there. Last year we used the museum also as a beer garden. We have DJs in there. So I had all my friends. The Hall of Science will have an exhibition at the festival, next week. So I know the administrators of the park. I know how the park works. I know how festivals work in the park from having been there for 22 years. So it was really the right location to do it. And it's
big. So this is not going to just be in that area. We also have to haul over to the other side of the bridge and to go to
they'll be coming to us. So everything's going to happen actually right behind the theater and what's called the festival site. So between the Unisphere and the LIE, on that big festival site, we'll have food trucks, we'll have family activities going on starting at 1 o'clock, and then we'll have the big stage, you know, which begins at 2 with performances from 2 to 8 o'clock.
That sounds. Now, is this is a thing they have every year, or is this something special this year?
No, this will be our fourth year doing it. Our first year we started on a very modest scale in Flushing Meadow Park. The second year we knocked it out of the park because we had Miss Lauren Hill and drew about 22,000 people the park in the pouring rain, but they stayed for the concert. Last year we had Dr. John, who's a famous, jazz blues musician, Kermit Ruffin from New Orleans. We had about 7,500 people, and we're expecting somewhere between 5,000 and 7,500 people. It's free next weekend.
Now, just offhand, is there any, can people bring their own picnics if they want, or...
Yeah, the good thing about it is we will have food trucks. I think they're going to be about 5 or 6 food trucks with varied menus, different ethnicities. But people can bring a blanket, they can bring chairs, they can bring their own food. There's no fencing because it's a free event. So
okay.
We have, you know, people can just show up and enjoy. They don't need to make a reservation. We'd love for them to make a reservation in advance so we can get them on our database and send them some more information about the festival before they come and keep them informed after. But they don't have to. People can just show up. We also would love
to
know
any,
people. Go ahead.
Will there be any seats at all?
There are, we do have some seats. I think we have like 100 or 150. It's called preferred seating. They're $20 a ticket. And so if somebody
okay.
wants a seat to actually sit down, it's $20. They can go to the Armstrong Festival website. And all that's on there in the website, of course, I got to find it for you, is, I should know this by heart, armstrongswonderfulworld.com. armstrongswonderfulworld.com. Or if they go to the Kupferberg Center for the Arts website, you know, it's on there too.
Now, as far as who's appearing, is there anybody, I mean, I'm not into enough music that
right.
I can
so
look at something
year,
and go, oh, yeah.
Well, it's a
I
good
mean,
question. We really wanted to keep Louis Armstrong and jazz alive in the festival. You know,
mm-hmm.
if you look at, like, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, the heritage part and the jazz is tiny, and they bring in people like, you know, Billy Joel or Paul McCartney. We're not looking to do that. There are other larger festivals and concert promoters in New York that do that. So we want to really keep it true to Lewis, to all kinds of music, to cultural diversity. But this year, it's the 50th anniversary of the song What a Wonderful World, and our theme was, you know, from around the world back to New Orleans and Queens. And there's a very notable musician named John Batiste, and he is a New Orleans bred and born musician like Wynton Marsalis, who runs, you know, jazz at Lincoln Center. John Batiste
right.
also happens to be the music director on the Stephen Colbert Late Night Show. And he is an aficionado
oh,
and expert.
That's why his name that's, sounds so familiar.
Yeah, John Batiste, great guy, great, great guy. And
is that the guy
so
who plays
will,
that, I don't know what it even is. Is
yes,
that
the piano
he,
with his mouth, yes.
That, yes, what is it called?
Yes. I don't know what it's called, but you
okay.
know exactly what I'm talking about. Yep.
Yeah,
so we
right.
asked him. So we asked him to curate, which means to pick the artists, and also
uh-huh.
to be the headliner and perform. So he's invited some pretty eclectic and diverse group of people. He's going to start it with actually a big drum circle where a group of percussionists are going to start not on the stage but by the Unisphere and almost kind of create a line and bring people over from throughout the park to the stage in the festival area. And that's going to start at around 2 o'clock. Then at 3, there's a very traditional, very well-known, if you know jazz, Vince Giordano and the Nighthawks. They're a really top, top-notch jazz band. They play the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. They play the Newport Jazz Festival. They play in the city. And John's going to jam with them, too. Then at 3, at 4 o'clock, we have members of the Dap Kings. And Sharon Jones passed away this year, the leader of the Dap Kings. But he's... Their members of the Dap Kings are going to play with John's band, which is called Stay Human, and also with 4 hip-hop rap artists. So that should be a very funky, hip, you know, section. And then we're going to close at 6 with John Batiste and his band Stay Human with a group called the Havana Roots Collective. And obviously they're Cuban and Cuban-Americans. And so we wanted to make sure that there was a Latino component given Flushing Meadow Park and the large Latino population. So it should be like a musical feast. And I'm really hoping that Louis can hear it up in the skies and smile down.
Right.
And say, this is what I meant by all kinds of music and all kinds of people.
Well, this sounds really great. This is a one-day festival, right?
Right, Saturday, July 8th, from 1 o'clock to 8 o'clock at night. And it's free.
Wow.
It's in Flushing Meadows, Corona Park. you know, the number 7 train gets you there. There'll be parking by Shea Stadium if people need to park, or parking around the park. But the idea is to use public transportation, bring a picnic basket, eat at the food trucks, bring a blanket, bring some chairs. It's really great music, good crowd of people, and celebrating, I think, the major icon. You know, some people think it's the Unisphere. I think it's Louis Armstrong that's from Queens. And nobody said it better about Louis Armstrong than his friend. And if you go up and take the tour, one day, Merle, I'll be glad to take you there, because it's pretty incredible to see the Armstrong house. If you come up to the top floor where his wife built a study for him and a little recording, you know, tapes and stuff, there's a painting on the wall, and the docent or the tour guide asks you, so look at that name, Benedetto. Do you know who made this painting of Louis Armstrong? And people go, I don't know. And Tony Benedetto is somebody, another major famous Queens musician. It's really, I'll tell you who it is. It's Tony Bennett, who is very close to Louis Armstrong. And Tony Bennett had the quote, which I love and still gives me chills when I say it. He said, every country must give the world something. We gave the world Louis Armstrong.
That's cool.
Isn't that cool? And Armstrong was, and you know, still is an international figure. I mean, when you go to the Louis Armstrong Museum in Corona, it's a tiny little house, a humble little house that he lived in with his wife. And you see people from Germany and Japan and Australia and, you know, Brazil and Argentina all finding their way through that little neighborhood in Corona to go to Louis Armstrong's house.
Wow.
So we really want to celebrate his legacy. We want to make him proud, you know, and that's why we're doing this festival. And again, because Queens College, we manage the museum. You know, Michael Cogswell, we have a director, and we manage the archives.
Now, I also wanted to ask then, in terms of the museum, because there's a second floor, is it accessible?
The second floor is not. In fact, if you go there, there is a chair, there's a staircase, there is a chair, but they don't let you use it. You know, one of those, like in the olden days, the chair that would go up the banister? They have that.
Yeah.
The first floor is accessible. And then they're going to be building a visitor education center across the street that'll be completely ADA compliant.
Okay. I'm asking because
I know, because you're legs, right?
Climbing stairs, right?
Right. Yeah, it's an old house, you know.
Okay, so, like, just curious, like, a lot of steps from one floor to the other?
12, 13 steps, yeah.
All right. Well, I'll see.
It's steep.
Oh, okay. Then I guess I'll send up
an event. We'll actually be having a groundbreaking on July 17th at 11. Come to that, because we're going to have a reception in his garden, and we'll do the groundbreaking with, you know, a bunch of the elected officials and other VIPs. But you can at least get a sense of that and go into the main floor and just take a peek.
Okay. As a matter of fact, what I'll do is I'll email the editor and say that I'm interested in covering it, and if they say... Here's the worst-case scenario. If they say, you know, we're having somebody else cover it, I'll say, okay, and I'll just cover it for the Queens Times instead.
Yeah, do that. Yeah.
Yeah, one or the other.
Do that.
I'll cover it. Well, actually, this is absolutely fabulous. I mean, and a good question. And if it rains?
If it rains, the show goes on, rain or shine. Last year, we actually had lightning, and we had to stop the show, and everybody ran into the theater and into the museum for like half an hour until we were able to start the show again. But it is a rain or shine event. There's no turning
back.
So
I might as well ask then, because of the theater, will like people say, where can I go to the bathroom? And they can go to the theater.
All right, so there are bathrooms in the theater. And we also have, like, a lot of portisans brought in during, you know, for the day only.
Okay.
They're brought in that morning, and they go out that night, so they're not used by anybody else.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. I will
probably
put
that
in the
article,
too, for people who, you know, need to know. Okay.
Yep.
So this is really cool. So let me then ask you a question. Because of the threatening cuts on performing arts.
For the arts, yeah.
Yes.
I think all of us are concerned about that and the impact
I know we can play.
Yeah, we're hoping that the National Endowment for the Arts will stay, because in some rural areas and, you know, in Republican areas, it's the only funding source for some organizations. So, you know, in the past, different presidents have tried to knock it out, and even the Republican senators and congresspeople realize that if they knock it out, they're not going to have any cultural funding in their areas, and they've always managed to keep it there. So, you know, I'm a kind of an optimistic person, but so I'm hoping that I'm going to remain optimistic.
Okay. I'll do that. I'll do that too. Yeah. Just listen. We need to have fun. You know, we need to have, well, not just fun. Yeah. You know, we need to see positive things that are not anger kind of ridden.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's and it's always great, especially with any of the arts. That's and by the way, I just. Curious, I heard, did Amy Winter retire from...
From the Godwin Turnbeck Museum.
Yeah.
Yes, she did retire. I'm trying to think when she retired. We had a fundraiser for her, a retirement party, in mid-November. She retired in the end of December.
Really?
And the two young women but the two young women that she really mentored for the past few years, Elizabeth and Brita, are doing an amazing job. I mean, amazing job.
Oh, okay. I guess I'll have to Facebook her and say, really? Because she was so involved with this thing called Rewoven. That was there.
Mm-hmm. That was it. She curated that. Even though she left, she came back to curate that show.
Okay. So she might, might do that. But in other words, she's told,
so she may still come back
and the people on are now the curators.
Yeah, but she, you know, they bring on guest curators a lot. So she'll probably come back and do that again. Yeah.
Okay. That's good to know. I've met her a couple of times, and I went,
wait
a minute.
Yep.
I just met her.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
She's good. She's good people.
Yeah, that's really cool. Is there anything else that we can add to this that you'd like to?
I think we've talked a good amount on it. I think the main thing is that seeing is believing and hearing. You know, come hear it, come see it. It's a really joyous celebration. As you know, if you ever watched Louis Armstrong in life or on TV, you know, or in a movie, you see how joyous a man he was, and that's what we're trying to emanate from the festival too. That same goodwill, that same joy. And I think we've captured it the past 3 years. I'm hoping we'll capture it again this year too.
And I have another question for you. You know, I don't know whether you can answer that. Just feedback. Do you think? Did you try the New York ferry yet?
No, I haven't.
The New York City ferry.
No.
Oh, you have to do this, because I'm interested in how, in terms of not just. I mean, originally it's set up for people to commute, to go to work. But this is now going to be a whole thing with tourism, because people are going to want to come here from Manhattan or wherever.
Yep.
So I was like looking to see, like, I'm trying to do a study of where it's all going, and and how it will bring to what areas it will bring people. In other words, everything to avoid the subway system, I guess, is really what it is. You know, so I'm going to take a look at. The nearest, I think, maybe would be Astoria, I think. I mean, it's not going to affect Flushing.
No.
In any way. But, you know, we've got to look at what it will affect. And then even if it doesn't, if it can affect something that would get people to get to Flushing and, well, anyway, I'll look at that. Because it's all, I'm all trying to connect everything so that...
Yeah. That of my league.
People tend to go into... It's like people always, they go into Manhattan for everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people coming to New York. And people don't know enough to stay or be in Queens or go to places in Queens. So... That's why I'm trying to do some type of connection. But if you ever get a chance,
take it.
Listen, for $5.50 round trip to be on
ride,
a boat.
Huh?
I mean, like, you go there, it's an hour one way. You get off, you schmooze around, you have lunch or something like that, go back on the boat. Where can you get it? $5.50.
That's good.
You know,
that's
so,
good.
But we're going to see, it's all going to be the East River, so we're going to see ways to connect all of that with the rest of Queens to visit other than what's at those particular areas. So we're going to look at that because we got to get people to come over to see shows at Queens College, again, without having, maybe they don't have to take the number 7 train.
That's right.
So, but I'll look at that, too. But anyhow.
All right.
I appreciate you calling and giving us all of this information. And I'm looking forward to this. Well, so this is on the 8th, July 8th. And then the groundbreaking is on the 17th.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And thank you for taking the time, too.
Oh, yeah, this is... We've known each other for so long. We feel so old.
I know, Merle.
So
it's been a long time. It's been a long, long time, Merle.
Yeah. All right. Great. Have a great day,
Have
Jeff.
A good long weekend. Take care.
Yeah,
bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, this is great. So I'm going to attend the event. Actually, it's interesting that I'll be attending the event because I watch Colbert all the time. So now I'm looking forward to attending it. I'll probably write about it the preview piece will be going into the Times Ledger, which will be timesledger.com. That should be in like next week. And then when I go to see the event, most likely the issue closest to that of the Queens Times, after it's over, will have the review of it. And also I'll be attending the groundbreaking ceremony. So to everybody, have a great day, evening. Now I want my glass of Ronnybrook milk. You know, what can I tell you? Wait a minute. I just want to play one. This is Paul Joseph, who sort of runs or does something or has to do with the music or of the Queensboro Symphony Orchestra. This is a piece that he wrote, and it's called Cry of a Butterfly. Clicking it again. Here we are. And now it's time for me to end my show a little bit early. So if you're listening to this, have a happy day, evening, morning, wherever, whenever you hear the show. And shout out to the Army.